Happy anniversary! 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 Happy anniversary!
So guys, you know, John Paz from the Two Man Power Trip and Creative Control Network and stuff, he asked if you guys wouldn't mind doing a 9-year anniversary drop for him for the Two Man Power Trip show.
Ooh,
John Paz, he's been on our show.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He's the Creative Control. Who's the other guy in the Two Man Power Trip show, by the way?
The Two Man Power Trip, though it remained the same, it kept its name. Chad doesn't do it anymore, so it's really the One Man Power Trip.
What is the premise of the show?
Two Man Power Trip is where Paz interviews wrestlers and personalities and whoever. He had Vince McMahon's lawyer on the show, so he gets.
He had
Dusty. He's had Sting. Yeah, he does. He gets good guests. Yeah.
Didn't we do a show with him on conspiracies or something or Trump?
That was his boy. His boy wrote the book about Trump and wrestling, how it influenced him. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, well, keep it up, Paz. 9 years. You know. Kazoo for the Chadster. Paz, much credit. Give it to Kazoo for the Chads. All right. Cody, you want
to... And who? Who? To the other guy. Yeah. Even though he's been on the show.
Right. Yeah. So props for the Two-Man Power Trip. Yeah. That's about the best endorsement you'll get from the K-100 crew right there.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Presentation is a Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the Two-Man Power Trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I am your host, JP John Paz, and this is the 9th year anniversary. A special joining me today, former WCW superstar, Mr. Lash LaRue, one of my favorite guests. Lash, what's going on? How you doing?
John, how in the world are you, man? Congratulations on 9 years. What a big deal that is. No small thing in any endeavor. It's certainly no small thing in the podcasting world.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. What's going on in your world, Lash? What have you been up to?
Man, I just came off of a whirlwind of a last quarter of the year. You know, with my business, with being caricatures and doing live events and that sort of thing, the holidays, once they start coming down the pike, man, it is fast and furious for me. And you sprinkle in there several conventions where I do digital caricatures now as well, and been traveling a great deal, man, been doing a lot. So right now at the beginning of the year, usually January is a reset for me, a much needed breather and an opportunity to get my feet back underneath me again before starting another year.
I love it. The characters are awesome. You do a great job. So that's great that they keep you busy.
Oh yeah, very much so, man. And, you know, again, like I said, especially around Christmas time, around the holidays, once fall hits, man, it is a fast frenzy, but it's year round, man. Nobody stops having parties. Nobody stops having weddings. You know, these conventions that I have really started making my bread and butter, those corporate conventions and trade shows take place year round. So I'm constantly traveling. I'm on the road now, John, probably as much as I was when I was in WCW.
Wow, that's amazing. Holy crap.
Yeah, I'm really racking up the frequent flyer miles again. I mean, a fun thing about that, and I don't know if our listeners care to hear about this, but it's funny to me, being somebody that wrestled primarily, you know, before we really started hitting this smartphone era where everything has an app to it and is really streamlined travel. You know, I come from the old school late 90s, early 2000s, man. They would literally FedEx you a booking sheet and you had an atlas and you knew you needed to get to that address and you had a paper ticket. You know, now I go through the airports, man, and I can follow my baggage on my apps. I can check in, you know, with my phone. I can do the same thing with my rental car, for crying out loud, you go to a hotel now, you don't even need the key anymore. You just use your phone to unlock the door. It's crazy to me, man. And I know that makes me sound super old, but maybe I just am.
Maybe, but the technology is crazy. It might be too much sometimes, some of this technology nowadays.
Hey, it certainly made it much easier, you know.
Now, when you're doing that, like back in the day, I mean, the traveling and stuff, who were some of like your big travel partners? Or did you really just travel alone?
No. I had a cadre, if you will, of good travel partners. And it's always important that you find people that are like-minded, that are similar dispositions as yours. You know, people that you can get along with that really become your brothers, because you're on the road with them more than you are at home with your family. And for me, my number one travel partner was Brad Armstrong. He was my brother from another mother, man. And anytime we were on the road together, he and I were the ones that were traveling. And apart from that, and even sometimes along with that, was Nick Patrick. Referee Nick Patrick and I were super close. We always traveled together. I traveled a pretty good bit with Hugh Morris and Chavo Guerrero. We were a good little travel group together. Referee Johnny Boone was a part of that for a while. Mark Johnson, Slick Johnson, was a part of that little travel group. Did that a little bit. Traveled with Disco some. Traveled with Billy Kidman, Rey Mysterio, and Conan, not quite so much, but a little bit with those guys as well. But generally, more often than not, it was somebody with the last name Armstrong, or it was Nick Patrick.
I just saw, I don't know if you saw it, Brian Armstrong, Road Dog, just posted a picture of Brad with Andre the Giant. And from far away, I thought it was Bullet Bob because he had the singlet and it had the weird, you know, the weird hair, the curly hair kind of thing. But I zoomed in and he said, it's my brother Brad. I was like, oh my God, it didn't look like him. I don't know if you saw that or not.
I did see that photo, man. And I think to people that at first glance, I thought the exact same thing. But to people that really knew Brad, that is certainly a very young, baby-faced Brad. Brad had that natural curly hair, you know, and he had that, all those Armstrongs had sort of a natural perm to their hair anyway, which was perfect coming up through the 80s. you know. And then, of course, Brad, as he got older and matured a little bit more and grew out the beard, he had that phenomenal late 80s, early 90s Ronnie Van Zant thing going, you know, where you had the different color. Your hair is a little bit lighter than your beard is. And it's an awesome look. I love it.
Very cool. I was like, wow, Andre the Giant and Bullet Bob. I was like, whoa, no, it's Brad. That's like, wow, pretty cool. Good picture.
Yeah, I've got a photo somewhere, man, of all those Armstrong brothers together, man. And it's a great photo, just a candid that was taken of them in their living room, and they're all kind of lined up, you know, in order of height. And, man, just such a top-notch family, top to bottom. I will always say I don't think that the Armstrongs get quite the flowers that they deserve in the wrestling business. They certainly get a lot of respect, and people love them, and how can you not love them, man? But to me, you take that family when it comes to wrestling, and I'll put them up against anybody. I'll put them up against the Harts. I'll put them up against the Von Erichs. They just have such a powerful legacy, and what really, I think, strengthens that legacy, at least in my eyes. You know, we were talking about your podcast. I mean, you know how difficult it is just to do 9 years and have something going that long and keep it relevant and keep it important and keep it out there in the space where people are paying attention to it. Well, imagine being a part of a wrestling family and you're able to take these guys and their careers stay relevant, not just for a 5-year run or a 6-year run or a 10-year run, but for 20, 25 years, make an entire legacy out of it. And we're not talking about one or two superstars from the family. We're talking about the entire family. That's impressive. Whether you're Scott Armstrong, Steve Armstrong, Brian, Brad Armstrong, Bullet Bob Armstrong, every one of them in their own right deserved to have a spot in the wrestling business and be well regarded and very well thought of. And then you take them as an entire family. I put them up against anybody, man.
Oh yeah. Do you still do the annual pilgrimage to visit Brad? You still do that, right?
Absolutely, I do. And in fact, I don't know, for those that may follow us on social media, Dr. Tom Pritchard and I missed each other this year, but we still went separately and posted our own photos. Generally, more often than not, Tom Pritchard and I will meet up at the exact same time right there in Marietta, usually early November, and we'll commemorate Brad and spend a little time together and spend a little time with our brother and our friend Brad Armstrong. And it's always super important to me. And if I can't get there with Tom Pritchard, I'm still going to go on my own. And, you know, it's weird because I'm not an overly sentimental guy. And I'm, to be honest, I'm not with that. I'm not like that with anybody else in my life. But Brad was so impactful on me and was such a legend in my eyes. And to then call him a friend and a brother in the same way, it's just it's that important to me, and it's that big of a deal. And he's not somebody I discount easily. And I've explained it probably best to Dr. Tom Pritchard this way. I realize, man, I'm very self-aware, and I realize everybody loved Brad. And Brad had a lot of friends. So I will never claim to have been Brad Armstrong's best friend, but Brad Armstrong was my best friend. And, you know, I'm a little bit like Wyatt Earp in the old movie there, or like Doc Holliday, rather, in the Tombstone movie, where he goes out there with Wyatt Earp and he's hunting down the guys that killed his brothers and attacked his family, and he's coughing and blood's coming out of his lungs and the whole deal. And the guys ask him, they say, "Doc, why are you out here?" And he says, "Because Wyatt Earp's my friend." And the guy says, "Hell, I got lots of friends, Doc." And Doc says, "Well, I don't." You know, I've kind of felt that way. I have a tight circle of people around me. I like to think I get along with most anybody, and there's not too many people that have passed, you know, across me and in my time that I haven't been able to spend some time with, get to know, and get along with just fine, man. I can work with anybody, spend time with anybody, connect with anyone. But as far as that close circle of people that I really consider brothers and those that I can count on in my life, I keep it tight on purpose because I think that that's important. And I think it cheapens friendships for you to just give that away freely to everybody and there not be some give and take. And Brad was always there for me, and we always our friendship did not depend on who was on TV at what time and who's under contract with this company and whether or not we were traveling on the road together. Our friendship surpassed all of that, and I want to, for the rest of my life, honor that as best as I possibly can.
It's a great movie, Tombstone. That's a great, yeah, good stuff there. Yeah.
Tremendous.
You know, Dr. Tom said the same thing about Brad. He didn't have many friends, but Brad was probably his best friend when he was, you know, running up and down the road. So pretty, you guys are pretty much in line right there for sure.
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, too, pauses. I've had this conversation a few times with some other people, and the older I get, the more I'm aware of it, especially now having stepped away from the wrestling business, but still having some connections back into it and ever so often running into some people. And I have found out in life, there are like-minded people in the wrestling business, you know, and there are like-minded people in life for that matter. And so often there are people that I have become friends with and become extremely close with pretty quickly, simply because we've had that mutual connection, that mutual friend. And Tom Pritchard, for instance, was one of those that he and I became friends because of our friendship with Brad, that mutual friendship. And it was like, even before I knew Dr. Tom personally, it was like, I may not know Tom, but if Brad thinks that highly of him, then I ought to as well. And I think that feeling is mutual with Dr. Tom. And I think that that's been our bond between us is, you know, and you get that in the wrestling business. There are people I'll run into and I'll say, well, I don't know this person, but because I know this other person and their friends, then I know we're going to get along just fine.
How come Brad couldn't take, like, behind the scenes, how funny he was and all this other stuff? How come he couldn't do that, like, in front of the camera as far as, like, be a wise ass? Because Road Dogg, like, you know, he's such a good talker. Maybe not as good of a worker, obviously. Brad was an awesome worker. But how come he couldn't bring that personality out and be, like, a real, the wise ass joke around guy that he was behind the scenes?
You know, I actually asked Brad that question point blank. I really did, because I always was curious about the exact same thing. And he told me pretty straightforward. He said, he goes, you know, Lash, I came into the business at a time, brother, when you just, especially if you were a baby face, it was a serious thing. And you had to be that white meat baby face and you had to be serious. And it wasn't ha ha. And most storylines, for what they were, if you want to call them storylines, really they were issues and they were angles back then, right? When he first broke into the business.
Yep.
And so if you had an issue or an angle, for it to draw money and for it to make sense, it wasn't really entertainment based. It was something personal and it was something, you know, serious and to be taken serious. And you really didn't have that many opportunities to do something that was just straight up entertainment. And especially if you add to that, being the son of someone that was seen as serious and carrying as much authority and gravitas in their character as Bullet Bob Armstrong did. You know, Brad's introduction into the wrestling business was Bullet Bob's son. And so I think you add those combinations. I think he felt this expectation to be a serious wrestler. And then you add to that the fact that he was such a great technical wrestler. It lended itself more to being serious than it did being some ha-ha comedy act. And I just don't think he gave it much thought. Brad was also one of those kind of people that he was happy to be working, man. He was happy to be relevant. And like everybody, I mean, you wouldn't be in the wrestling business if you didn't have some semblance of an ego and if you didn't want to be on top and if you didn't think you were capable of being on top. But Brad had charisma, but I think he cared more about the wrestling aspect of it. And I just don't, I think he saw that, how do you take someone's character and get it across on TV is really somebody else's job. His job was to go out there and have great matches. And that's what he did. And it's just coming from a different era. And by the time Brian came along, not only did you have the shifting winds in the wrestling business, but I don't want to speak on behalf of Brian, but I feel like I know the family well enough to be able to say too. I would say Brian came into the wrestling business with a total different perspective. You know, he didn't come in traditionally as the whole legacy Armstrong wrestler so much as the guy that just got back from this big stint in the Marines and had seen a great deal of life in a very short amount of time and at a young age. And it became very real to him very quickly, I'm sure. And suddenly something like taking wrestling overly serious as opposed to just being myself and getting what I want out of life probably was not as much of a big deal as it would be to somebody that did nothing but, you know, lived, breathed, and ate wrestling. You know, Brian came in with an opportunity to be getting into wrestling and to break into wrestling, but man, he had seen some other aspects of life by then. So I'm sure that that colored things a little bit more too, where he goes, you know, life is too short for me to not just go out there, have fun, and be myself.
Yep, definitely. Now, you mentioned another travel partner of yours, Disco Inferno. What was he like? Because you see, you know, a character online, or maybe some of the things he said, maybe he's portrayed a little bit, maybe in the wrong light, but what is he really like?
I think Disco is, there's a certain element of wrestlers out there that you just have to know how to take them, and you got to know who they are. And if you can get past that veneer and that facade of, hey, that's their personality. And it's like this with people in general out in life, right? You get underneath that and you go, okay, I'm going to assess whether or not I think this is a good-hearted, good person, non-malicious person or not. And I can look at Disco and first of all, I can discount the stuff that you see just on the surface, where he's being sarcastic and where he's being controversial and where he's saying some things that maybe the other people wouldn't say and they'd bite their tongue on. You know, you get underneath that and you get past just talking about wrestling and talking about the issues of the day. Disco's a good-hearted person, and I always found him to be a hard worker and somebody that was reliable and that you could count on. And we got along great because of that. And I saw past all the sarcasm and saw it as just him cutting up, and that's his personality. And I don't think he always gets a fair shake because of that. But he's also quick to give his opinions. I mean, you know, he's that type of personality. And I understand that. I get that. I think some of that is him playing into what he sees as his public persona as opposed to who he is in real life. But that's okay as well, you know. And that's the wrestling business for you. And I think sometimes we take things a little too seriously and we take issues that are just storyline way too seriously. And we don't see the people as who they are deep down inside. And I judge people on how they treat me. And Disco was always great to me. He was always fair to me. He was always kind to me. And I couldn't say anything bad about him because of that. And then as far as from a wrestling standpoint comes from, I think because people don't like his opinions, he often gets a bad rap for being a cheesy throwaway character. But for what his place was in the wrestling business at the time, and for where he was on the wrestling card, and for what he brought to the company versus what he's getting paid by the company, I think Disco was a tremendous talent and a great hand. If I was starting a wrestling company and it was that era of WCW, you know, I think Disco is good business for where he is on the card, for what role he's playing, for the talent he brings to a match. Was he somewhat limited? Possibly so, but he knew exactly what he could do and couldn't do, and he didn't try to get outside that wheelhouse. And you look at his matches, they were solid matches and entertaining no matter who he went against. What more could you ask for if you're a wrestling promoter?
I agree. I just feel like maybe because he's so opinionated and he could be harsh, which is kind of basically hitting you over the head with the truth with a hammer. You know what I mean? It's like people don't like that. They just don't appreciate that.
That's exactly right. And he's certainly not diplomatic. And I'll be honest, I'm the kind of person, I'm the exact opposite, Oz, man. My opinions are my opinions, but they're not so important to me that I'm going to get them across no matter what, whether I care what you think or not. There's often times I have an opinion on something that's going on in the wrestling business that I just keep it to myself because, number one, I know it's going to be controversial. And number two, I'm not arrogant enough to think that somebody else is going to care what my opinion is on it. So, you know, why am I going to share something that's going to get me heat when it's really not going to move the needle on where wrestling fans are at large?
When you look at, like, WCW at that point, there were so many good guys on the roster, but it was so top-heavy that sometimes those guys underneath never got through that quote-unquote glass ceiling. You know, maybe they did elsewhere, but in WCW it was so hard because you got Hogan and Luger and Sting and DDP and Goldberg. It was just so hard. But Disco and yourself and Jericho at one point are all kind of those guys that were kind of stuck in between. They couldn't break through because all those guys had the political clout and the name value in WCW ahead of you guys.
Sure. I think self-awareness matters so much in the wrestling business. And sometimes you can lose that because you're stuck in this bubble. And all you know is what you're trying to do with your character and in the space that you're working in. So when you start seeing fans react to you and you start believing your own stick, so to speak, and you get a good following behind you and you maybe get a little heat, a little bit of a push, and something's driving you, you can start thinking a little too highly of yourself sometimes. And I'm not knocking people that do that. You have to do that in order to climb that ladder. But I said all that to say this, that perspective is a powerful thing. And the older I get, the more of it I have. And I can remember even being a young guy in my early 20s in WCW and buying into some of that, going, well, maybe there is this ceiling, and how are we expected to break through, and we need to be given some opportunities. And then one particular night, I was at a Nitro that I was booked on but did not have a match. And I was still anonymous enough that I could stick my hair under a hat like I have now. And, you know, now I look like I've got short hair because it's all stuck underneath my hat and people don't recognize me right away. And I can go out there among the fans and I can watch the show from a fan's perspective. And I remember watching that show and seeing Kidman come out and get a great reaction, and seeing DDP come out and the people go nuts, and seeing the NWO come out. And of course it was that juggernaut that it was. And then I saw Hogan come out, and it was a totally different reaction, similar to what we probably saw with The Rock making his return, you know, on Raw. And when you see that and you feel that rumble in your soul, and you felt those fans go crazy and that Road Warrior-esque pop before, and how it just vibrates throughout the arena, it's a different animal. And when you see that live, then you have to say to yourself, you go, okay. You know, you may be getting a great reaction when you go out, but you're not getting that reaction that Hogan just now got, that I just felt deep down in my soul. So it's kind of hard for you to argue with the powers that be that are after the bottom line and are chasing the ratings and are chasing that money and the profit and doing right by all the people that they have to answer to and put out the best product that they possibly can. You're going, okay, that guy's the top guy. So then what are your options? Your options then are to try to make yourself as undeniable as you possibly can, like someone like a Goldberg, because for all the people that can claim they were held down in WCW, you can't argue the fact that here comes the rookie Goldberg, who's able to come into the wrestling business and immediately shatter that glass ceiling. So the argument can kind of be made both ways, and you go, well, now, wait a second, though. We see what Jericho is now. And did WCW really drop the ball on that one? I don't know. Maybe. Or maybe the wrestling business was just such at the time where someone like Jericho had to leave and go someplace else and get a fresh start and get a new little shiny coat of paint on him and get an opportunity to present himself in a different way in order to make that next step to the next level. That's just a wrestling business, man. And if I were in the wrestling business right now in my prime and really trying to make a name for myself, and I was a young guy, I would look across the landscape and see all these different playgrounds that I could be involved in. And I would say, hey, I really like my chances that if things aren't going my way here, then I'm going to trust my talent and try over here. And if TNA doesn't have a place for me, maybe NXT does, and WWE can see something in my future. And if they don't, maybe AEW has got an opening there that I just fit perfectly for, man. And you just don't know. I mean, wrestling is all about timing. It really, truly is, because when it comes down to it, either you have the talent to compete on that level or you don't. And if you do, then you're probably going to get an opportunity somewhere at some point. Then it's just a matter of what did you do with it? And was the timing good to where you're against the right opponent in the right arena at the right moment? Are you CM Punk in Chicago coming back after 8 years? You don't microwave 8 years, right? You don't. It's just that time away did him some good, so that when he comes back, he has a different level of relevance and he has a different level of impact. And the fans are going to respond in a different way because of who he is and where he's at. And it's a restart for him. And I would, dare I say, to even take that theory and that thought a little bit further, I'm not sure CM Punk could have immediately come right back to WWE and garnered the type of respect and opportunity that he's going to get now, as he did by coming back and making that AEW impact, courting all the controversy that came with it. Having the run that he had there, good, bad, or ugly, and now have the opportunity to come back to WWE in a different light, in a different vein, and reestablish whatever legacy he may leave there. good on him.
Now, you're about the same age as Punker, and you just wrestled recently. Are you planning on continuing to wrestle?
Well, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I feel really good about what happened, John. I really, truly do. I didn't know what to expect because you take a long layoff, and it really does do a lot to you. And the only thing I could do was get myself ready mentally and physically for it. I had not been in the ring for 13 years when I went and did GCW and wrestled Joey Janela. And I legitimately can say, without training, I didn't go and train. I didn't work out in the ring. I didn't take some bumps to prepare myself for it. I went to that show, sat down with those guys and said, yeah, let's do this thing. And went out and had a 15-minute match without blowing up, without feeling like I had to hold back, still doing the splits, still doing suicide dives, still doing the whiplash off the top rope to people through doors, you know, still doing stuff outside the ring. And felt great about it, man. Physically left there feeling wonderful. And I really think that wrestling is one of those things, man. It's either in your blood or it's not. And I wasn't certain about that before I went and had that match. After I had the match and I rolled out of the ring, I felt better about it than I did before. You've known me well enough now to know, man, I'm not an arrogant guy. I don't blow myself up. I don't try to promote myself on social media to say I'm the next big thing and you guys are crazy for not booking me. But I felt so good about that when I left that match that now I'm sort of picking my shots, man. I have a very successful caricature business that I'm extremely happy with, and I bring something to that space that nobody else does, and I'm doing really well financially with it. So it's going to take some stuff for me to come back to the wrestling business, but I think I have a lot to offer to it. And so if the right opportunity comes with the right company and I have the opportunity to do some things that I think are worth my effort and worth my physicality and putting my body back out there in that way and really going through the grind again, I would love to do it. I love the wrestling business. It doesn't leave you. Being able to tell those stories in the ring, regardless of what era you're in, doesn't change. The psychology remains the same. So I think I bring a good mind to it. I think I still have all the physical abilities that I had before. I can go out and have great matches. My matches would only get better the more I do it again. But at the same time, I'm comfortable enough and now in my skin that I'm in a different place than I was. When I was in my 20s, man, I just wanted a job and I was happy to have a job. And you didn't want to mess up those opportunities when you're young and you're afraid of certain things because of that. I'm at a point now in my career, I had so much fun with that match with GCW because the company themselves in that locker room was so welcoming and so awesome to me. And because I was so self-aware, man. Instead of going out in the match and having tunnel vision and going, I can't mess this thing up and I don't want to screw up this opportunity, I went out there, looked around, and saw an arena full of fans that were going, you still got it, and remembering me that I was in the moment in a way I never was previously in my career. And I enjoyed it so much. I had so much ring awareness. I knew exactly where I was at all times. We hit those marks. We didn't botch anything. We didn't miss anything. I had a great opponent I was out there with that I could work well with. There was nothing about that experience, man, that I could say anything negative about. Now, the only reason why fans have not seen me pursue that more aggressively is simply because I haven't seen the doors quite open. If those doors open, man, I'll jump right through them. You know, and if they're not there, I'm okay with that too. You know, I went to that match literally telling the people around me that I go, if this is the start of Lash LaRue making a big comeback and I make that one more run, I want my day in the sun and one more run and I ain't done. Hey, if that's what it is, I'll grow the sideburns out and we'll all make some money and we'll have some fun with it. And if that's not what it is, then I'm perfectly comfortable taking all that new gear that I had made for that pay-per-view, taking those new tights with that new double L fleur-de-lis logo that I created, put them in a shadow box, hang them on the wall, and say, hey, it was a great run. I'm okay either way, man.
I love it. That's great. Hopefully see you wrestling more. As we hit the wind down here, head towards the finish, where can everybody find you, book you, get some caricatures, see you? Where can everybody get you?
Man, I'm low-key and I'm easy. You can find me on X, @LashCanDraw. So that means I can draw for you physically if you have me at your events and you want me to do caricatures, or if you got some commission work that you want me to do and some illustrations, then I can draw. And if you want to book me on a wrestling show or an autograph signing, I can draw. I'll draw a crowd for you. So you can find me on X at LashCanDraw, or you can just email me directly, LashWCW@AOL.com. Yes, that is an actual email address that I still have after 25 years.
All right, Lash, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Johnny. Congratulations again, man. 9 years. Let me hear you tell about it.
Guys, you're going to brush your teeth today? Why is that? Because it's a healthy part of your day and you don't want bad teeth. I want you to take it another step and add skincare habits to your daily routine. I just did, and I promise you I'm never going back. I am hooked on Caldera Lab high-performance men's skincare products. Told you guys last time around that first impressions matter. Your teeth and your skin are the first thing someone notices about you. Backed by legit clinical trials that found 94% of men's skin showed an overall younger-looking appearance after using the products for only a few weeks. Caldera Lab is the regimen you've been looking for. Habit stacking, habit hacking, whatever you call it, Caldera Lab is here to take your daily routine to skin royalty. Take my word for it, or one of the thousands of five-star reviews. And just for our audience, we have an exclusive offer. This is the best offer available anywhere. Use the promo code POWERTRIP at calderalab.com and 20% off right now. That's right, 20% off using the promo code POWERTRIP at Caldera Lab, and make an unforgettable first impression that leads to the charming words, "You look younger." 20% off at Caldera Labs with the promo code POWERTRIP. Get to calderalab.com today. Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. Your host, JP John Paz, with me today, very special guest, former WCW and WWF head writer, the former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How you doing?
What is going on? John, what is this now? 9 years or something?
Yes.
You said, oh my
yes.
God, bro, when are we going to move on to something else instead of stupid wrestling, bro? Real John, with your talents, bro, and your wisdom and knowledge, we're wasting them on wrestling, bro.
You sound like my wife. When are you going to get over this stuff?
Yes, bro? You know, there you go. Yes.
It's been 40 years as a fan. So, I mean, geez.
Like, bro, listen. Yeah. Hey, bro, I got to tell you this. Bro, you know, you probably know the name, the great R.D. Reynolds, who was a co-author of The Death of WCW. Bro, like you and like me, R.D. was an avid, avid wrestling fan. R.D. was an avid AEW fan. And you know, bro, about a little while ago, like I said, man, listen, bro, I've been a wrestling fan since 1968 and I'm done. Like I have zero interest in the wrestling business. There's nothing that appeals to me. And RD came on our Batman show last week and he announced the same thing. He said, I'm done with wrestling. He says, It's not what I grew up on. It's something completely different. And, you know, he was an avid AEW fan and he said, I'm done. I need something else to find. I think there are a lot of people that feel that way, bro. And, you know, obviously it's not us, you know, like we're not involved in the wrestling business, you know, like, bro, I look back and John, same with you. It's like, I know you're a Giant fan.
Yep.
And they shit the bed.
Yep.
I'm a San Francisco Giant fan. And even though, you know, the last couple of years they shit the bed and many, many, many losing seasons, like I'm still a Giants fan, you know, because I don't know what it is, bro. I don't know if it's, you know, at least I'm kind of still seeing effort on the field. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm still a Giants fan. But with wrestling, bro, there's just no, I could care less that The Rock came back. I could care less what the WrestleMania main event is. I could care less who wins the Royal Rumble. There's just nothing there for me anymore, bro.
Wow, it seems like right now in Triple H or whatever, the WWE machine, it said it's the biggest year they ever had financially.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Good so for them. I mean, bro, I get interested. Like, I'll get interested in, like, certain stories that really have to do with like, I'm not interested in anything pertaining to product. Nothing. But like when a guy like Kevin Dunn leaves, I'll talk about that, bro. I worked with Kevin. I will talk about what I think that means to the business of the WWE and stuff like that. So like I'm always interested in those behind the scenes stories, but I'm just talking about as far as product goes, like I just have zero interest.
Now, with the Kevin Dunn thing, it was interesting because Mark Shapiro, the guy who, you know, was one of the bosses for TKO, basically was not making fun of production people, but kind of took a shot. This was, I don't know if you saw this a few months ago in a press conference. He goes, so many production people don't realize we can cut costs here and cut costs there. They're so attached to certain things. Oh, I got to have this camera, got to have that. And I'm thinking to myself, WWE is the best production ever, pretty much, and yes. Dunn has been the spearhead of it, and the guy TKO who's now taking over is saying, oh, we're going to cut some of your production back. You think that's why he basically said, I'm retired, I'm not dealing with this?
I think, bro, first of all, let me make one thing perfectly clear, okay? Kevin Dunn was as valuable to the WWE as Vince McMahon was, without a shadow of a doubt, period. End of story, man. When Kevin Dunn's father was working for Vince, you know, Kevin Dunn was pulling cables and he's been in this forever. I really think, like, and I don't have any knowledge or anything, John, I really think it was a loyalty thing. You know what I'm saying? He was very, very, very loyal to Vince. Bro, listen, man. Kevin Dunn is a millionaire 10 times over. So with Vince gone and, you know, then maybe they want to make some changes and whatnot, bro, at Kevin Dunn's age and with what he's, you know, with what he's done in the business, leaving his mark, I think it was a perfect time for him to say, you know what, I'm done.
And if you look at it, my God, how much stock did he have? I was trying to figure out how much money it would be, but Jesus, I mean, it's it's like tens of millions of dollars of stock.
Yeah, bro. I was saying, like, there's no doubt in my mind, Kevin Dunn, like, bro, he's gotta have $100 million. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
With him leaving, do you see any changes, or that it's just, you know, he's a cog in the wheel and they just keep rolling, and like,
yeah,
what happened?
Bro, I think slowly but surely with Endeavor, and I've been saying this for years and years and years and years, I think you're going to see that good old boy network become dismantled one person at a time, because in a lot of ways that dude was right. It is archaic. And they've been doing it a certain way, like, for just so many years. We always talk about the wrestling bubble. So I do, bro. I do think in 2024, you're going to see a lot of changes. I really do.
Now, Vince is still around, but I guess he's just not the head of creative. Do you see him skedaddling altogether? Because, you know, he sold a big chunk of stock too at one point.
Man, bro, I kind of feel like he already has skedaddled. I mean that's how I kind of feel. And bro, I think a lot of that, like, forget about, you know, changing hands and all that, bro, I just think a lot of that is age, man. I mean you know, John, I'm about to be 63. At 63, I can't do podcasting like I was doing podcasting 10 years ago. I mean, I can't. And, you know, obviously I'm in a position where, you know, I still need to work. You know, obviously Vince McMahon doesn't need to work. So I just really think age, if not anything else, is caught up with him.
Does the fact that they had the biggest year ever, does that do anything as far as, like, I don't know, pique your interest of, like, wow, well, how are they doing this? Like, how are they making so much money nowadays and with kind of less people watching than back in the day? I know obviously inflation helps, but does that, like, pique your interest? Like, man, their business is like kicking ass.
I've been saying this since I started, you know, podcasting 10 years ago, bro, with all these, you know, streaming services and media outlets, bro, content is king, man. And if you're a company that just keeps churning out new content, and not only that, you've got 50 years of history of content in the bank. I mean, bro, that's what they are. I mean, listen, I'm convinced, and this is why I don't care about the product anymore, because the reality is neither do they. I mean, ratings, bro, if you care about ratings, you're not going to kayfabe The Rock on your show. Ratings don't matter to them anymore. Good stories don't matter to them anymore. Characters don't matter. They're content creators. I mean, that's what they are, bro. And they're making big deals with these companies that want their content, no matter what it is. So you're just going to see much more of the same going forward this year. They're just going to be churning out content, really not caring how good that content is.
Crazy. MSG, I actually went to the show that CM Punk returned 10 years later, you know, wrestling. 16,000 people were sold out. The merch stand looked like it was ransacked by rioters. Like, it was crazy, like, the amount of people that were buying stuff there. I just was like, wow, is it a boom or something? Where did this come from all of a sudden? I know obviously Punk has like a cult following, he's super popular, but MSG last year didn't sell as well, obviously. And he returns, and all of a sudden the business, and they sold the most, it was the highest grossing event non-televised in WWE history. So where did these fans come from all of a sudden? Were they dying for something?
I think it definitely is a Punk thing, man. I think he does have a following. I think, you know, you're also looking at, you know, like, how long was he in AEW? Am I going to wait till the next time to see CM Punk, where there may not be no next time? So I certainly think, bro, like, he definitely drew a lot of people to that show, because, you know, he does have a following. Wouldn't have been any different if you would have advertised Stone Cold, or if you would have advertised The Undertaker. I think you would have got that same type of crowd, you know, because these are legendary people. Man, I still remember, bro. I still remember, you know, many, 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 many years ago, like, I flew out to San Francisco to watch a couple of games and stuff. Bro, I remember seeing Tony Gwynn. you know, like play the last season in his career. You know, you want to see things like that. There's no question about it. But, bro, I'm also not going to deny they've got a loyal Mark audience, bro. Very, very loyal, that no matter, you know, how low the ratings go, no matter how many people stop watching, bro, they're going to continue to watch that show and support that show no matter what. It's very much like AEW. But, you know, again, bro, you know, like I said, I look at people like myself and RD and people like that have just been watching this forever. And it's just not the same, man, you know.
It's not for you anymore, if you will. No, yeah. No. It's like me with those Marvel movies, man. They could be good and whatever. It's just not for me. And I love comic book stuff, but I just can't stand those movies.
I was the same way, bro. I think I saw like the first two Iron Mans, and I think I saw the first Avengers. And then after that, I was like, okay, like, how many more of these do I need to see?
Yeah, there's like 27 of them or something. It's like nuts.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah.
Do you think Punk leaving AEW is kind of like the nail in the coffin there? Remember the whole disciplinary committee and he was fired and all that stuff? Man, that came to bite them in the ass. 2 months later, the guy sold out MSG and did the best money maker MSG ever had for WWE. And, you know, Hogan, Bruno, Austin, I mean, Rock, all these guys were before that. And this Punk leaving, for whatever reason, infused so much money into that place for a house show. And they kind of left money on the table. What do you think about AEW, that being like the death knell for them?
Bro, I don't know if they'll ever be a death knell because Tony Khan has endless money. See, yes, that's the thing, bro. We always have to look at AEW, you know, with a grain of salt because money is not part of the equation. You know, like you and I, John, we look at everything, you know, from a business point of view and making money. That's not part of the equation with him. This guy's a billionaire. He's got endless amount of dollars. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. Bro, he just wants to book a wrestling company. So I don't think there is a death knell. I don't think there'll ever be a death knell. I think he'll continue to go on. Bro, I think 2024 is going to be the identical year for AEW. You know, the number is going to stay about 800,000 people. He's going to bring a billion more people into the company. It's not going to make a difference. They're going to do a great show in Wembley Stadium where they're going to make a lot of money. And that's basically going to be the gist of it. But the reality of it is, as long as he is booking a wrestling company, the dude's going to be happy.
When you look at AEW right now, the ratings obviously are not doing good. Some shows, as far as attendance wise, are not doing good. That doesn't, you're saying like that doesn't matter. He's not looking at the bottom line, so to speak.
Not at all. Not at all, bro. It would be like if you bought the New York Giants, all of a sudden tomorrow you came into a lot of money. You bought the New York Giants. Not only did you buy them, bro, you are now coaching them. And, bro, no matter what their record is, no matter how good or bad they play, you are happy being coach of the Giants, and that's all that matters, and business is just going to go on as usual.
To me, they need some sort of and he went nuts. Remember he went nuts on Disco when Disco said he needed a reboot? I do feel like they need something or a new booker or whatever. They need some sort of reboot, whether internally or on TV. Do you think so? Because it just seems like whatever they're doing is just not working right now.
Yeah, obviously, bro. It's like, listen, man, I saw it with my own two eyes. You know, the greatness of Vince McMahon was the ability to hire the best people around him and let them do their jobs. And when you look back at the Attitude Era, bro, you had Kevin Dunn, you had Jim Johnson, you had JR was, you know, talent relations. He let Vince Russo, you know, write his television and he left Vince alone. You know, he left me alone. So he hired the best people around them and let them do their job. Tony's not going to do that, bro. He literally wants to be the centerpiece of this company. He wants to write the shows. He wants to be at the head of the table of the scrums. This is what he wants, bro. So he's not He, bro, come on, man. He had Eric Bischoff there for a couple of weeks. If you ever wanted to pick anybody's brain, you've got Eric right there. And what did that turn into? That turns into now he hates Eric Bischoff. He's never, ever, ever, bro, going to hire the people that he desperately needs and let them do their jobs because that's the job that he wants.
When you look at it too, like as far as like what he needs to do, is that like an ego thing or is that just he's just such a like fan or whatever? He's just so into
bro, it. Ego has yeah. everything to do with it because okay. what bro, even after everything that happened with CM Punk, why is he still head of the table at those scrums? There's no reason for him to be there whatsoever, bro. And the reason he's there is because of ego. There is no other reason why he's there.
Did you like the sunglasses and wig at the last one?
Bro, like, he wants to be a character, bro. He wants to be a character. He wants to be front and center. You know, he was comparing himself to freaking Ted Turner. Bro, the funny thing is, I don't know if people remember this. When Ted Turner bought the Atlanta Braves, John, he actually went in a dugout and managed
a game.
Can you imagine if Ted Turner would have managed the entire season? That's what you're getting with AEW, bro. That's exactly what you're getting. The same thing.
That was nuts. Obviously, yeah. Billionaire Ted was crazy, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was. Oof.
I mean, Ted realized, like, okay, I own this team and it's great, but I don't have the tools to manage this team. Like I said, bro, one of my pet peeves has always been in professional wrestling. You know, not anybody can wrestle, but everybody can write. Oh, bro, everybody can be a professional. Oh, well, you're seeing today how everybody can write.
Not true at all. I mean, it's just crazy. And he was answering in that scrum was funny. He was answering like a dead serious question with the wig and the glasses on. Like that was crazy.
That was a parody of the wrestling business. I've been saying this all along. The wrestling business had become a parody of himself. And then you look at that scene. It was a parody. It was a parody of a billionaire crazy owner at a press conference, you know, dressed up like an imbecile. It was exactly what I've been saying it is for the last 10 years.
I think he should have been the devil when they revealed that storyline. I think that would have been great.
I agree. I definitely agree with you, bro. It would have been better than what they did.
Oof. That whole storyline was, I know you probably weren't watching or paying attention.
I don't watch it.
I followed it for months. I mean, it was terrible. Oh man. Yeah. Really, really bad. But the thing is with Disco and the irrelevant Parasite thing, I like to poke fun at Disco and stuff. I'm sure you do too. So does everybody. But I was thinking, I was like, wow, irrelevant Parasite. The guy literally bled, sweat, tears for the wrestling business, traveled millions of miles on the road. He actually didn't buy himself into the business. This guy trained. And, you know, he's getting into the business the hard way. And, hey, he's probably getting ribbed by the Steiner brothers. You know what I mean? Oh, the typical stuff of when you get in the business and this and that. I was like, wow, that was kind of a shot from a guy who paid his way in with his dad's money.
Well, bro, an extension of that. John, there are three reasons why I'm no longer interested. I did a little YouTube yesterday. There are three things which have totally just separated me from wrestling. And I don't think there's nothing they could do that would make me ever care about the product again. And I'll tell you what the three things are. Number one, bro, the tribalism of the fans is absolutely pathetic. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing and it's pathetic because, John, you freaking know, man, when you're sitting there on Sunday and the Giants blow that game, you are cutting the promo of all promos, even though it is your team. That's a real sports fan, bro. We all know Philly fans and Red Sox fans. Bro, when you start calling for the manager's head, like, that's a real fan. The wrestling business has turned into, bro, if you are in WWE camp, they do nothing wrong. And not only does the WWE do nothing wrong, AEW does do everything wrong. And then vice versa. You're an AEW fan, bro. They don't do anything wrong. You're a CM Punk fan. He doesn't do anything wrong. It's freaking embarrassing, bro, the way that the wrestling marks have become. And quite frankly, bro, I don't want to be a part of that because it is embarrassing. Number two is something you just mentioned, John. John, you're a very, very different animal, and you've been doing this for 9 years. And you clearly know, you know, what your role is and what your mission statement is. And you sit there and you know, I am a fan of the professional wrestling business. And you say, I've been a fan for 40 years. So what you're doing is you are doing a wrestling podcast from a fan perspective. And you understand that. And that's great. That is absolutely great. The problem is you've got all these dirt sheet writers now, bro, the Saps and the Housemans and all this, these people that, because of these scrums and because of Tony Khan letting them in and Triple H letting them in, these people now believe they are part of the business. And John, anybody knows, man, I saw the great, you know, Gene Washington just got hired as the Angels manager. Bro, I saw a great interview with Gene Washington where he really talked about, bro, there is a tremendous amount of difference between knowledge and experience. They're two completely different things, John. You've got knowledge in wrestling. I got knowledge in baseball. Do you really have experience in wrestling? No. Do I have experience in baseball? No. We know our roles. These guys have convinced themselves now that they are a part of the business to the point of, you saw what just happened with Nick Houseman and Jericho. That's the same thing. Jericho, Disco and Tony Khan, same exact thing. So now you've got these wrestling journalists who have convinced themselves they're part of the business. And now they're taking shots at people that actually left their blood, sweat, and tears on the table, like you said. As a journalist, that is embarrassing to me, and I don't want to be a part of that. And John, the third thing to me is really the product. Bro, you know, Dutch Mantel always uses the saying, good little hand. That's what Dutch always used to say, good little hand. And I understood what a good little hand was. A good little hand was a good worker, a good wrestler. A good little hand will get baby faces over. A good little hand will get heels over. And you need your good little hands on the roster. The only problem is, bro, in 2024, the good little hands are now in the main event. That's the problem. So when you've got casual fans turning on wrestling and seeing, you know, Dominic Mysterio, not to pick on Dominic because he's not the only one, but Dominic Mysterio, like in the main event of a wrestling match, you've got casual fans like me saying, wait a minute, man, these ain't pro wrestlers. Like where are the Hogans and the Halls and the Nashes and the Goldbergs? So the good little hands now have literally made it to main event level. And that's a big thing, bro, that have really, really, you know, turned off fans like me. So you combined all three of those things. Man, bro, there's really not too much appealing. Like I said, you know, John, you want to talk about business. You want to talk about what they made at the Garden. You want to talk about Kevin Dunleavy. You want to talk about stuff like that. Fine. But the actual product, you know, the team they're putting on the field. Wow, bro. I don't know of anything that would ever get me back.
So no interest in The Rock versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
None at all.
WrestleMania 40.
Zero. Zero. I won't watch WrestleMania.
No. Do you ever watch
No, bro. I swear to God, since I left the WWE, I watched one WrestleMania show, and it was only because one of these sites paid me to go out there for personal appearances and stuff. It was the one that was outside with the NWO and Sting and all that.
Oh, yeah, WrestleMania 31. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that one, because what happened was they flew me out there, you know, to make a personal appearance and all this and that. And like literally, bro, the day of WrestleMania, I was sitting in my hotel room. So I'm like, I might as well. And I watched it on my computer. Bro, that's the only WrestleMania I watched since Austin Michaels.
Wow. So you went 17 years basically between Manias. Wow.
Yep, that's the only WrestleMania I've watched since I wrote my last one.
I thought Rock might get you back interested in it.
Not interested at all.
I did think that was a good promo by him when he said, he goes, oh, I'm going to go to the restaurant. And everyone's like, where is he going with this? What the hell is he talking about going to the restaurant? He goes, where am I going to sit? Going to sit in a booth? Going to sit at the bar? I like the bar. It's a good spot. And he goes, maybe I'll sit at the head of the table. And then everyone went nuts. So I feel like I thought that would have got you intrigued a little bit, that he was teasing his fight with his cousin. So even The Rock can't bring you back. Damn.
No one's bro, here's the thing. You got to understand, I am a writer and a storyteller at heart. Like, here's a perfect example, John, to steal a phrase from Disco. I'm watching Dave Chappelle on Netflix last night with my wife. And I just keep turning to my wife and saying, my God, what a storyteller. What a story. What an amazing, amazing storyteller. So that's what I'm all about, you know, storytelling and characters. So, bro, look at this situation with The Rock. You got a guy that hasn't been wrestling for how many years now?
Oof.
Rock, how many has it been?
I think, God, 10 years probably. Yeah, I think it was WrestleMania 29, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
say 10 years. You got a guy that hasn't wrestled in 10 years, and you got another guy that's never on TV. So, like, what am I interested in? Like, there's no story. There's, you know, they're literally taking a guy that's never on TV and a guy that hasn't wrestled in 10 years, and they're putting them together in a ring. And like I said, for me, who's just all about the story, there's no appeal there for me. I mean, basically, at the end of the day, for the job that I do, all I need to know is who goes over. Like, that's all I need to know is who goes over, and I certainly don't have to watch it to find out who goes over.
I think what they should do, I think, is who's the head of the table. Is it The Rock? Is Roman? Bring back every living Samoan family member. Have like a thing. You know, have a whole, I don't know, trial or whatever you want to say. Have a group meeting or whatever, a reunion. That would be kind of cool to bring all back.
That would be
like
very
whole
cool.
Family.
That would be very, very cool. Yes.
Because I just thought it was interesting when they originally started this head of the table thing. Remember, Offensica came out, they put the lay on Roman Reigns. It was during COVID, but I thought that was great. I was like, that's so cool. It's like, okay, they're actually saying like the family lineage, the history. Like, I like all that kind of stuff.
I agree with you 1,000%. You know, that stuff would be cool. I mean, that stuff wouldn't get me back interested in the product, but I would enjoy that stuff. But again, John, they're not going to do that because they're content creators. I'm telling you, bro, they don't care how. Bro, if you cared about how many people watched every week, you're not going to kayfabe The Rock. You certainly are not going to let people not know that The Rock is going to be on the show tonight. They're content creators, bro. That's what they've become.
Do you think that a part of that is because The Rock is like, I'm not sure if I can make it that day? Is that play into it too, that they don't know if he's going to come or not? Because it seems like they kind of bowed out to him sometimes. It seems like, hey, I'm in the area. All right, we'll put him on the show.
Absolutely not.
So you didn't, or not that you didn't like it or didn't say it, but the Jinder Mahal thing I thought was funny because the fans were so disappointed that he was the former champion. And he came out, and then The Rock came out after that. Then they got the big pop.
Yeah, I mean, they basically set everybody up that way. Yeah. That, you know, Jinder comes out, and everybody goes, you know, I mean, that's the way they set it up. But if it's me, who was all about the ratings.
Yeah, you promote The Rock in a show.
Of course, man. You know, of course, even if what you said was true, you know, he's coming that day. You know, so that day you go all out on social media and whatnot. But to kayfabe him tells you they don't care about how many people watch the show.
And hey, Michigan, Alabama had 28 million people watching them that same day. Yeah.
Right. But bro, I swear to God, I had to ask myself this question when they kayfabe The Rock. They are so in the wrestling bubble, bro. Seriously, John, did they even know there was a college football game on that day?
Ooh, I hope so.
I do too. But that's the question I ask, because how do you not advertise The Rock?
Right. Because that game was at such a weird time frame that it basically was a part of most of Raw, just the weird timing of it. It started at 5, and then halftime is God knows. Halftime felt like it was like an hour long. So basically it's going to end up going to 9, 9:30, 10 o'clock. I mean, it's going to go. And then there's a game after that, Washington and Texas, that also. So it literally back to back and eats up all of Raw. So I hope they were paying attention to that. Didn't seem like it, but you're right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
As we wind it down, we head towards the finish here, Vince. Just want to mention some TV show that I'm watching, because I feel like you were into TV, obviously way more than you're into wrestling. I just started a show called A Murder at the End of the World. It's on Hulu. I think that might pique your interest. I don't know. It seemed very good. The writing's very good. I'm only a couple episodes in, but it just seems very interested.
Who's in that?
Oh, I don't know who she is. She's a good actress. Damn it. Okay, I don't know her name.
It's not the Julia Roberts one.
No, Clive Owen is the star. He's kind of like you think he's the villain, but we don't really know.
Okay, tell me what the name of it is again, bro, because I will watch it.
A Murder at the End of the World.
On Hulu.
Yep.
I will definitely check that out, bro. I will definitely
check. Any shows that I need to check out?
What now?
From you. Any shows that I need to check out from you, like that you would recommend?
Bro, I just started watching, and bro, it's the simplest... It's the simplest action Arnold Rocky gimmick. But bro, this is what I hate about like the excuses when we hear wrestling is evolved. Okay, bro. So wrestling is evolved, which equates to there's more wrestling on the shows and no characters and storylines. That's what wrestling has evolved mean. Meanwhile, bro, television shows are the same. There are still characters and storylines. Television is not changed. Only wrestling has changed. But, bro, this is like the simplest of simplest things. I just started watching this show on Prime called Reacher.
Oh, I love that show. Yes.
Bro, as simple as that is, you got a main event character that's cool as shit that you want to be. Little by little, you find out pieces of his background, but he really is a mystery. And it's so freaking simple. But yet here I am, you know, hooked on that show because I love the character. Whose ass is he going to kick next? And how is he going to kick it?
Yep.
Bro, nothing has changed in television but professional wrestling.
I love that show. That show is great. And I love Surinder Swan, his love interest in season two.
Ooh-wee. Yeah.
And I was just watching an episode.
I'm not even into season two yet, bro.
She's the love interest.
Started, bro. So she's not the cop in season one.
No, she's in season two. She's like the love interest over. Yeah.
Okay. But just a basic kick-ass Arnold Rock with a little bit of a story. And I'm in, bro.
I absolutely love that show. He's awesome. Alan Ritchson, whatever his name is. He looks like the Ultimate Warrior. Like, he's just some huge jacked up, but he's a good actor.
He's great. It's great, bro. So, yeah, man, there's still some really good TV out there. That's why they're always like the WWE, not the WWE, AEW. Tony Khan's claim to fame is like they're always number one in cable. Well, bro, could that have anything to do with their shit on cable? Like, seriously, bro. Do you watch it? Who watches any cable shows? All the good shows are on Hulu, Amazon Prime, everything that you talk about. So he's boasting that they're number one in the night in cable. Meanwhile, there's crap on cable, bro.
And Fargo is a great show, which is available on cable, but it's on streaming, too. I think most people watch it on Hulu. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where I don't know. I feel like streaming has every good show.
Yeah, like it does. It absolutely does, bro. Without a shadow of a doubt. Yep.
So Vince, give us some plugs where everybody can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, I'm going to plug one thing, guys. Please, if you've never been a brand of, if you've never been a subscriber of my Patreon, you can go there right now and get a free week of the brand. It will cost you absolutely nothing. A lot of people have been taking advantage of it, and it's great. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/RussoTWC, and you can get a full week, all the shows of the brand, absolutely free.
love it. Vince, thank you so much for all the time today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, John. And congratulations to you, my friend.
Thank you. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.